Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 443rd episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia, and it took me three times to get that opening correct. I think I'm losing it.
It's remarkable because you don't really have too many troubles with the rest of the podcast. It maybe is one in every 10 that we have to record something else. But the intro is usually two to three per try.
Yeah, anyhow, I don't know why.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada. I'm also a professor at the University of Alberta. And we have a smoking good topic today.
Oh, see what I man. Did? Best segue ever.
We're going to say smoking, good looking. That was
that true.
That's the host. Oh, you mean the guest? Right, yes. Of course, the guest. Okay, Mike, introduce yourself and tell us what you're going to fill our brains with today.
So thanks, guys. Mike Colber. I'm a family physician in rural northern Alberta in Peace River and a professor at the Faculty of Family Department of Family Medicine. It's not a faculty. Department of Family Medicine at the University of Alberta in here in lovely Edmonton, where it crossed zero, I think, for the first time in quite some time.
Which is why everyone there smokes.
And why you have to exactly. Yes. Smoking outside in Alberta is different than smoking outside in BC.
Exactly.
Yes. Awesome.
So
we're going to talk. Yeah, what are we going to talk about, Mike?
With that fantastic introduction, we're going to talk about electronic cigarettes or nicotine electronic replacement systems, and specifically the evidence about whether it can help patients get off traditional cigarettes. And obviously, I'm sure we're going to chat about other things and other issues with e-cigarettes, especially considering recent harms. Admissions and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously we'll probably tackle some of the youth issues with pertaining to youth.
And okay. We just about a month ago put out a tools of practice on this. So that's sort of the premise of what we're going to be talking about. So why don't you lead us through it, Mike?
Sure. So yeah, we basically updated an older tools for practice. I believe it was done, I think about 3 or 4 years ago, and we updated it because there were a few other randomized control trials that we thought people should be aware of, and also the harms that are starting to emerge. So you're right, we did update this tool February 2020. And so the evidence we're gonna go through, randomized control trial evidence, not cohort studies, for the efficacy. So randomized control trials, and we're gonna focus on larger studies of over 200 patients. There were a couple other smaller studies, if I remember correctly, 100 Korean factory workers. And again, these just weren't large enough to really help. And it wouldn't make any difference. And when we look at the totality of the evidence, we wanted to look at trials over 4 weeks duration and really objective documentation of abstinence. And so objective documentation of abstinence includes CO monitoring. And you can't just say, are you smoking? It's like when the dentist asks if you flossed your teeth. You know, yes is correct if you did it the day before, but if you always floss your teeth, that's another different thing. So same thing with this, with the smoking, we want objective measurements.
And that's been going on for decades when we look at anything to do with nicotine patch or.
Yes, this is nothing new.
Yeah,
exactly. Most of these studies are industry supported, and by industry supported, I mean that they're actually supported by the makers of the electronic or e-cigarettes. And just giving the listeners an overview of a typical patient enrolled in these studies, they're about 40 years of age, smoking 3/4 to a pack a day for the last 20 to 25 years. And the numbers that I will give you will be continuous abstinence, which means you enroll in a study and you don't have a traditional cigarette for the whole extent of the study. It's not, last week abstinence or one day abstinence, it's continuous abstinence. So I want to separate these in smokers motivated to quit and smokers not intending to quit. And so smokers motivated to quit, you'd think that they would have higher success rate as far as continuous abstinence. And the first study was one of the original studies was 657 New Zealand patients with an active encouragement enrollment of Maori indigenous from New Zealand. And these patients were randomized to a nicotine e-cig, nicotine patch, or placebo e-cig. And for this one, they looked at 6 months abstinence, and they found that the nicotine e-cigarette was 7% continuous abstinence, the nicotine patch was 6% and the placebo e-cig was 4%, and there was no statistical difference between any of the three groups. Again, and these were smokers motivated to quit. It's probably not surprising to your listeners that, you know, the 6 months absent rate was low, under 10% for any of them. The next one I want to show you and talk to you about was a recent study in New England Journal of United Kingdom patients, and these were just shy of 900 patients randomized to the nicotine e-cigarette or any other type of nicotine replacement therapy. This one had a large socioeconomically disadvantaged patients enrolled, and therefore they were provided their products for free. Many of the patients were provided for free. This one, when they followed them forward for a year, they found their complete or continuous abstinence of nicotine e-cigarettes about 18%, nicotine replacement therapy about 10%, and the number needed to treat was actually 13. So for every 13 patients that use nicotine e-cigarette, one additional one would quit and/or be continuously abstinent over 12 months compared to nicotine replacement therapy. So that one got a lot of press when it was published last year. So that, again, smokers motivated to quit, and that was a publicly funded study.
Yeah, and I think if I remember that study correctly, The tricky part about that is usually with, not always, you know, we all know people who, you know, continue on nicotine replacement basically forever, you know, chewing gum forever and all those sorts of things. But in that study, if I remember correctly, none of them got off these electronic cigarettes. It wasn't like you're really replacing one addiction with another. You're not actually getting people to literally stop.
Correct. So I think if you looked at what people were using at 12 months, many of them, and I can't remember the exact number, were using the electronic cigarettes. And conversely, like almost zero were using nicotine replacement therapy. Very, very few. You're right, James. Yeah.
So, I think, you know, we'll talk about the benefits and the harms. The theory is that these electronic cigarettes might be, you know, may have less toxicities long term. I don't know. We'll talk a little bit about that. But if you're thinking that this will get them off of things, it doesn't. It just gets them addicted to a different form of it.
Yeah, I think if the goal was getting patients off, so it's the devil you know and the devil you don't know. So maybe to chat about that a bit further, if our goal was to get patients off of traditional cigarettes, then I think that study would say, hey, that was a success. If the goal is to get them off of all products and all nicotine products, then you'd say that really isn't a success. As like you said, many of these patients continue to use a nicotine replacement through the electronic cigarettes. You're right.
So what about, so that's with smokers motivated to quit. What about with smokers not intending to quit?
Yeah, so the fascinating one was an older study published, if I remember correctly, gosh, 5-6 years ago. And this was 300 Italians that said, hey, I think it was through primary care. And these Italians were, hey, are you interested in quitting smoking? Nope. Do you want to be part of a study? Or sorry, are you interested in quitting smoking? Nope. Do you want me to help you quitting smoke? Nope. And they said, perfect, let's enroll you in a study. And so these 300 Italians were randomized to nicotine e-cigarettes, tapering doses of nicotine e-cigarettes or placebo e-cigarette, and they combined both of the stable dose nicotine e-cigarette and tapering doses together. And 12 months continuous abstinence for the nicotine e-cigarette from traditional cigarettes was 11%, and placebo e-cigarettes was 4% for a number needed to treat of 15. So that was very interesting. The next one, and I put this in between. So these smokers, the next group of smokers were basically American company workers through a number of different companies were actually approached via email to participate in a smoking cessation program. Out of about 6,000, just about 1,000 responded to the email, and that was enough to enroll in the study. So this is very, really, I would say, minimally interested in quitting smoking. And so what they did for them, they randomized to a number of different interventions. They all got a little probably electronic information leaflet about education and about how you should try and quit smoking and smoking is bad for you. And then they added things on. They added whether it be nicotine replacement therapy, nicotine e-cigarettes, and then on top of those, either cessation aids or nicotine e-cigarettes. They added monetary rewards or redeemable deposits. And I'll just walk you through all of these different outcomes at 6 months. So just receiving information. So these are people that said, yeah, sure, you can send me some information. We'll roll in a study. Less than 1% of the patients were continuously abstinent at 6 months. If you use cessation aids like nicotine replacement therapy and or antidepressant, that kind of medications for cessation, about 3% were abstinent at 6 months. Nicotine e-cigarettes were 5%. However, the interventions that really seemed to make a difference were monetary rewards, meaning I'll pay you at the end of this study if you're continuously abstinent, which is about 10% cessation at 6 months. But the best was actually redeemable deposits, which means there's money in your bank account. And if you smoke, the money starts to disappear, depending on how you smoke and how much you smoke. And that was about 13% 6 months abstinence. And so I think for that one, it showed that, again, just nicotine e-cigarettes compared to information and or cessation aids were not really much different. But some type of monetary reward may or may not push people, which is kind of contrary to what the evidence had shown in the past with traditional smoking, in that normally when you talk about the financial benefits of not smoking and not continue to pay for cigarettes, it really doesn't seem to move people. But for this study, it seemed to move people.
And so call me crazy, but it sounds like nicotine might be addictive.
I call you crazy, but you're right. Nicotine might be addictive.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, if you look at all of the other nicotine replacement things, we don't see numbers any different than this usually. I mean, it's, you know, you whenever you use gum or the patch or whatever, especially if they're motivated, you only get maybe 5-7% more people not smoking at a year usually. And so this is just a very, very difficult thing to deal with. So I don't know, Mike Allen, do you use this? Is this something that you would recommend?
E-cigarettes?
Yeah.
You mean, or other interventions? Yeah. So obviously you try and get people to quit smoking and really advocate hard for it. I traditionally haven't advocated for a switch to nicotine replacement, except for one of my guys who, like, he basically told me no, in no uncertain terms, that there was never any chance of him quitting smoking. So I did talk to him about nicotine, these e-cigarettes kind of thing. But virtually the others I try and get off entirely. Mm-hmm. That's probably my bias, and I don't know whether that's good or bad, but I do consider, as you can tell, I consider the e-cigarettes when I don't see any other option. And I use it because of this idea that the one trial from Italy that showed, I think it was Italy that showed that these people who said there's no way on God's earth that I'm actually going to switch, or that I'm actually going to stop. That in those ones, and that was the exact patient. So I don't use them very much, and I agree with you. The nicotine replacement stuff, like patches and gums, it's a small difference. Then the antidepressant type agents, mm-hmm. like bupropion and nortriptyline, have about a similar effectiveness, which isn't quite as high as varenicline. From the best available evidence we have.
And you have to try numerous things. I mean, the old caveat is that you have to try to stop 5 times before, you know, you'll actually stop. And so, you know, it's nice to have all these options, but I think right now this is one, we're just replacing one addiction with another addiction. So the only advantage in theory of this is that it should have less side effects. And I know, Mike Colbert, we didn't really mention the adverse effects in the randomized controlled trials. I don't, you know, what did they show?
Yeah, so you're right, James. So in the we'll just talk about the randomized control trial evidence and then the evidence to harms that's starting to emerge. So the randomized control trial basically showed inconsistently. Normally they're inconsistently reported, but if you're actually going to find something that was consistently reported, it would be throat and mouth irritation, not surprising considering what you're doing. You're smoking something different. I'd say a couple of years ago, although I've never prescribed electronic cigarettes or really overly encouraged them by myself, if somebody came in and said, I'm considering this, a few years ago, I would say, I'm okay with that. I do believe in harm reduction and trying, like Mike said, try and get them off traditional cigarettes. With the theoretical advantage that people aren't dying from, you know, using nicotine, they're dying from all the other carcinogens. And there was some early evidence that supported that theory or those thoughts. Now, as you know, long-term, we don't have great long-term data, safety data, but we have this intermediate stuff and we're getting case reports. And so you have to take case reports with a bit of a grain of salt because you don't have a great comparator, meaning how many people are dying every day from traditional cigarettes in the United States versus e-cigarette use. That being said, things are evolving and we are seeing cases of e-cigarette or vaping product use associated lung injury, which they call EVALI for short. And there have been deaths in the United States. And they're trying to figure out what's really killing them. Is it nicotine or is it something else? And as far as they can say, they can determine, it seems like, gosh, THC, here THC raises its head again. It seems like the THC containing nicotine or electronic cigarettes seem to be associated with what 80% of the hospitalized serious lung disease from e-cigarettes. And further to that, there might be even a specific product called vitamin E acetate, which might be the toxicant. I don't think we know for sure. These are hypothesis generating. Obviously, the randomized control trials don't find these kind of these shorter randomized control trials aren't finding the serious harms that we're seeing with the case series and or some of these cohort studies. So basically, the CDC is recommending against the use of THC containing vaping products. I think we need to kind of continue to keep our pulse on this and see what really does emerge. And if we really are replacing one known significantly harmful product with another unknown or known significantly harmful product, then we're probably not winning the game. If down the road we are actually doing a proper comparison, I guess time will tell. And maybe there are certain people that really should not consider e-cigarette use, and maybe it's a risk factor for developing respiratory disease down the road. And we really, these products are so new, we don't know. What we do know is it's very challenging to know what's actually in them, because for quite some time there was no regulation on them, and some products that would say they have nicotine don't have nicotine in them, and some products that aren't supposed to have nicotine in them. So I think that is very challenging to figure out what's actually in your electronic cigarette product. I think some regulation and increasing regulation is important. And then the final thing is trying to have, if it's a long-term smoker, like the studies have been on it for 20, 25 years, and they're trying to get off a traditional cigarette, which is known harmful, that's one thing. But having young people starting to use electronic cigarettes are probably not helpful. We don't have great evidence about the long-term outcomes with them. But we do know that although traditional cigarette use in young people are going down, electronic cigarette use in young people are increasing. And I think we probably need to have some policies in place such that direct to young people, and some of them are starting to become in place, that advertising is not happening towards young people, flavored, just kind of like the regulations that we had with traditional cigarettes 20, 30 years ago need to be in place. So you're trying to make it very challenging for young adolescent people to be exposed to these products.
And like you said, they may not have the carcinogens in them. I'm not saying that as a guarantee, but they may not have as many carcinogens, but you're still inhaling something into your lungs. And so, you know, that we don't really know, you know, whether it's still now equally linked to things like COPD and asthma and all those sorts of things. So it is really tricky to know what to do with these agents. And that's the part of the problem. You know, we have some evidence, but the most important evidence is for long-term use. We just don't have it. So it's a very tricky area. And maybe it's why, you know, both Mike Allen and Mike Colby, I'm sure you guys don't recommend it that often at all because of that. But, you know, as with all any of these things, I mean, if I had to be hooked on nicotine, I think I'd rather have it as a patch than inhaling it, just contextually from a potential side effect process. But like I said, people do end up taking these. They replace one form of nicotine with another versus necessarily always getting off of it. Anything else you guys want to add to this?
Nope, that's it, James. I think you've covered it.
Yeah.
We're in an evolving space. And, you know, when we were writing this tool, things were coming out on a week-to-week basis. And we said, okay, we have to write it now and do it now, knowing that probably in a year or two down the road, as the evidence of harm emerges, or maybe doesn't emerge, but I suspect as it emerges, we'll probably have to update this one in the next couple of years again, because I really do think we're right in the middle of going from really no thinking that it really was from the randomized control trials and the older ones saying it's safe and again, less carcinogens and all this stuff, to now, hey, wait a minute, there's some problems. And I really think this is in the middle of the evolution of this information.
Yeah, so Mike Colbert, great job. Mike Allen, decent job.
Yeah, I phoned it in, James.
Yeah, well, we tend to be, we don't phone them in, but we Skype them in.
Yes.
So make sure you check out all the tools of practice that are going on, all of our guidelines that we're producing, and we are right in the midst of producing at least a couple more, and we'll probably have even more after that. So lots of work's being done, so stay tuned. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
So long for now.